Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, James.
Thank you for joining us this morning. And I guess to start off, could you give us a brief rundown of how energy can actually be generated through nuclear means?
Yes, yeah, so a nuclear power station is essentially very similar to a conventional thermal power station, whether it's powered by coal or by gas or by oil. So essentially it creates a lot of heat. This heat is then put into a circulating liquid like water. In the case of water, it creates steam. The steam then runs a steam turbine that then spins around and generates electricity. So all that simply happens in a nuclear power station is you change the means of heat generation. Instead of burning fossil fuels, you replace that with a nuclear reactor where the splitting of atoms, primarily uranium atoms, releases energy. This energy is captured as heat, and this provides, again, the source of thermal power. So it's very similar to a major thermal coal-fired power station as we have at the moment.
Yeah, right. But I guess there's just probably a little bit more science to it as well. Does Australia currently produce or utilise nuclear power in any way, or is it mostly just exported?
So at the moment, nuclear power is forbidden by legislation in Australia. That's a very unusual situation. There are very few countries in the world that forbid the use of particular forms of energy for whatever reason by legislation. So Australia stands out in that regard.
Wow.
But at the same time, we're one of the biggest exporters of uranium in the world. We have about 40% of the world's uranium reserves, and indeed, we power the nuclear reactors of many countries overseas. So we participate in, if you like, the initial part of the nuclear fuel cycle by providing uranium fuel, but we don't participate in the latter stages, which is the use of nuclear power or indeed the storage of nuclear waste.
Yeah, you did mention the federal legislation in place that impedes nuclear progress in Australia, but I guess if coal mining began to phase out in the wake of a renewable boom, would we expect amendments to such legislation and a resulting nuclear expansion?
Well, I think if we were to take a completely technology-neutral approach to energy, then we wouldn't have legislation forbidding any type of energy, whether it's coal or renewables or nuclear. We just have a level playing field where all energy sources could stand on their merits. And indeed, the philosophy of our Energy Change Institute at ANU is that we are both policy and technology neutral. So we don't favour one type of energy source over another. So in an ideal world, you'd have no legislated prohibition. And then you'd look at all energy sources on their merits. And their merits include their economic feasibility, their environmental issues, et cetera, et cetera. And if you were to do that and you were to look at the environmental issues surrounding nuclear, then clearly it's another option to replace fossil fuels and thereby reduce global warming. And indeed, that's a direction that many countries are taking. But at the same time, you also have to address the nuclear waste disposal issues. And again, that presents a technological challenge that people have to deal with, but at the same time it's entirely tractable, and indeed it could present opportunities for Australia in storing not only the small amounts of nuclear waste that we have in this country, but also perhaps the nuclear waste from other countries in the future.
Yeah, I guess on that topic of nuclear waste, it is a byproduct of it, but what kind of safeguards, I guess, would be in place to safely contain that waste, and I guess what sort of environmental implications could it bring?
Well, there are all sorts of ways of dealing with nuclear waste, and one of the ways that is being looked at, particularly overseas in the Scandinavian countries, is to dig very deep tunnels, kilometres underground, into the bedrock, which has been stable for millions of years, and to store the nuclear waste deep underground in a safe repository that then allows the waste to decay over the many hundreds, if not thousands, of years required for it to become neutral again. And so there are technological solutions, but they require an additional cost, and so that adds to the economics of the comparison between, let's say, renewables and nuclear energy, which of course will be the driver in the long run anyway. And at the moment, with the rapidly decreasing cost of solar and wind, it looks like renewables are well and truly ahead of the nuclear power game at the moment.
Yeah, right. I guess fear of nuclear development as well kind of comes into people's, I guess, unease when it comes to that kind of stuff. Do you think the events of Fukushima and Chernobyl kind of play heavily into that?
Oh, of course. And, you know, we have to look at these events in context. You know, Fukushima arose as a result of a massive earthquake and tsunami that killed around 20,000 people. But no one has died from the effects of the nuclear meltdown at the plant that was the cause of such enormous dislocation and subsequent follow-up cleanup work. And so, you know, these things have to be taken into proportion, and it's all about risk management. I mean, you know, there are risks associated with running coal-fired power stations, for example, not just the effects of carbon dioxide due to climate change, but they also release radiation. They also release particulate matter. You know, it's a matter of how much money you want to spend at reducing risk to what is believed to be an acceptable level that determines how you do risk management in modern society. And parliamentarians, politicians make these sort of judgments every day. You know, it's the same question as whether you spend an extra dollar on health or an extra dollar on defence as to what the best human outcome is. It's a very similar risk management process.
Definitely. There's so many elements that come into it. I guess there's another question as well of how our position on nuclear energy compares to that of other countries around the world and whether they'd be able to, I guess, influence Australia's position as well in the future.
Yes, that's an interesting discussion because, for example, France generates most of its electricity by nuclear power, 75% or so. And indeed, they have a need to store nuclear waste, as do many other countries. And Australia has a number of significant advantages. We have a very large, a very stable continent geologically. It's a relatively dry continent, by and large, and we have a very stable geopolitical structure, which gives other countries confidence that, you know, if they were, for example, to provide their nuclear waste to Australia to store in the middle of our very stable, very dry continent, that that things would remain there and would be safe for centuries. So there are indeed many proposals for Australia as a potential repository for other people's waste. And the South Australian Royal Commission, which produced its report a couple of years ago, looked very closely at that and found that this could indeed be an enormous wealth generator for Australia well into the future.